thinking of how we look at the women's suffrage movement and the women who progressed that movement as major history makers, who would you nominate as a modern figure of our current social rights movements?
Because the movement is so diverse and global, there are a number, you know, like for women outside the U.S., Malala has been huge. And the other would be Dream Hampton, who is behind the Surviving R. Kelly documentary. She's been involved with so much that most people don't know about. And I would include DeRogatis, the male journalist who has been for, I think, about 20 years trying to offer evidence through his journalism, his investigative journalism, to bring R. Kelly down. And he hasn't. He is one of the people who says that black girls are the most just disrespected groups when it comes to popular culture. I always have a caveat with that because I'd have to put in all of the Native American women who've played a role in trying to, from Standing Rock to other things that are going on today, Native people in the immigrant community and in the Mexican community and that's going on with immigrants and the kids that are being detained. I think it's a sign to say that the suffragist movement is no longer, it's not a either or thing anymore. And I know a lot of people not wanting to embrace the F word would say that they're not suffragists, but there are a lot of fathers who would be like, you know, I want my daughter to have her full rights. Jay-Z and his album talking about his daughter and clearly influenced by Beyonce. There's a college in Green Bay. It's a St. Norbert's College. It's a Catholic institution. Their women's studies program invited me to speak there. And this young woman, she was a senior, a young white woman, women's studies major. Her father's extremely conservative. This had to be about 15 years ago, I think. Her father could not understand why she wanted to be a women's studies major. I mean, he really was a typical conservative Republican. And she got killed in a car accident. And he came to St. Norbert's to meet all of her teachers that she raved about. And he decided to donate a significant amount of money so that they could build the women's studies program in her name.
That's awesome.
And so he comes every year. They do a program. So the lecture I came for, he was there. And he's really altered by what happened to his daughter that he couldn't understand, but he didn't let it die there. You know, this is the benefit of like mad mothers against drunk drivers. For me, this is all a part of the suffragist legacy. It's a part of the black feminist legacy. It's a part of the legacy of social justice in the United States, that people are not stopped by loss or by tragedy or by an election of a president you don't like, that you're not stopped by it. It was a hard blow for a lot of generations of women when 45 was elected. I call him that man because my best friend, who's a biochemist, this black woman, she grew up in a family where her father left them when she was young for 15 years. And she said, I knew he was going to leave. And before she was five, she wouldn't call him daddy. Mm-hmm. She called him that man. And they would be like, say daddy. She'd go, that man. I am in love with a book that's helping me through the 45 moment. And it's called Joyful Militancy, Building Thriving Resistance in Toxic Times. Mm. It's by Nick Montgomery and Carla Bergman. And this book, the glossary saves my life. Like, so I really believe in the intersectionality of all the social justice movements. I think it's kind of absurd at some point now that we would argue over, you know, remember in our class last week, I asked who was a feminist, and some people were like, I don't want to take that because, you know, white women. And I was like, you know, that was then. Stop living out other people's realities and be a both and, all of the above feminist, all of the above social justice activist. I may not agree with, I've had students whose values do not align with mine, who believe the other side of the story, fence, issue to me, but I would never disrespect them or their issue or say, you can't write about that in my class. We need to be able to allow people to find their way to their truths. And we need them to have some space to be confused, to be oppositional without opposition, to not have resistance to it, like a Chinese finger cuff, like the more I resist, the more they persist. So I think the suffragists, you know, like it's fascinating to me that we're living in this, that I'm living in this region where with so much history in Rochester and in areas around here, and that I have an opportunity to go see the places where these people treaded upon the earth and go see the grave of Harriet Tubman, or which I intend to do. And it reminds me of my first academic position was at the University of Virginia, Thomas Jefferson's plantation, university. I used to always jokingly say that because when I got there, it looked like a plantation to me.
Accurate, though.
And at some point, you know, on some level, it might have been an academic institution, but they had slaves. And there's a slave marker on campus still today, mm-hmm. you know, a burial of, that's hidden in the bushes by some dorm. And so what I learned about, you know, I think the last thing that, it's something we take for granted, is that you need to go to the places where people, it's not even a spirit thing. It's like when Muslims take the journey to Mecca. It is something about moving your body through spaces where other people have tread for your liberty. It's just saying thank you, being grateful, saying, you know, like, for all that you did for us, I'm willing to take a little sojourn to see your grave or to stand in the place or in the outside the Capitol where you fought. So much is like digital and in our hands as opposed to about literal movement for the social movements that we have all been benefits of. I sound so profound. But I mean, I and the only reason that that feels that way for me is because we're near those places. And when I taught at UVA, it was like we're near the history. I could teach in the classroom about slavery and it'd be palpable because you could go to Monticello on the weekend and most people had been there. And if I said, you know, where did the slaves that took care of the first 20 students live? That students knew what we were talking about. So I would put on a hip-hop exam that Thomas Jefferson said that African-American, well, he said blacks or probably niggers or Negroes were imitative, not creative, and put that on a test about hip-hop sampling to make the history palpable, you know? And I think we take for granted all of the countless hundreds of thousands of human interactions that led to us using this technology, this microphone, these clothing, this building, this architecture, you know, this way of speaking, not so formal anymore, all sometimes formal, all of the things that some anonymous beings contributed to so that we could have the benefit. And I don't think it's limited to being a U.S. citizen. I'm not that mm-hmm. patriotic. and I'm not going to play that little game about I love my country. Yeah. I wouldn't live someplace I didn't love. I don't have to broadcast that. Mm-hmm. But I think that we don't honor enough that I didn't do. It's not independent Declaration of Independence is not independent. It's not about independence. It's about interdependence. It's about that the kings and queens don't have to the only say, and that I don't want to be the only one to have a say either. That's the same thing, whether you're a pauper or a king. If you're the only one that gets to say how things go, that's called tyranny. I'm very grateful that you asked me these questions. I've never, you know, I don't get to talk about it much. So I'm excited about the series.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.